the firm that is North Rock, which is basically 170 people that are hyper-focused on helping Craig and his team, helping our 55 PMs and their 120-plus analysts to manage the assets the best way that they possibly can. So I thought he'd be a great resource, and I understand the time constraints, so I'm going to go ahead and hand it off to Craig, let him talk about the fund, the goal of the fund, how we achieve that, and we can answer any questions that you might have. So thank you, Craig.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. Yeah, so just a quick background on myself. As Dan mentioned, my title is Global Director of Research. What that means is I report directly into our Chief Investment Officer, Kelly Perkins. The two of us make, Kelly with the final say as the CIO, but make a lot of the, or all of the allocation decisions that we have to our managers. I joined in 2016. In February of 2016, North Rock officially had launched in 2013, so north of a 10-year track record at this point. When I joined, we were much smaller in size and have grown to just about $5 billion of AUM is where we sit today. The 11 years I spent before joining North Rock in 2016 was at a firm called Basswood Capital. Basswood is known in the industry as a hedge fund focusing on financials. There, I was a senior analyst in a stock picking idea generation capacity. Today, I'm in a managerial one, not selecting the stocks myself, nor is Kelly as our CIO, but instead, selecting the managers as well as allocating appropriately to different sectors and regions. So just a quick step back on what North Rock is. North Rock is a multi-PM hedge fund that specifically is focused on equities. So I believe you may have had historically some other investments in multi-strategy funds. So I want to draw that distinction that North Rock is specifically focused on equities. We are not focusing on fixed income, macro, commodities. We have 55 different portfolio manager teams, as Dan mentioned, that are all focused on equities. Predominantly fundamental equities, although we do have some quantitative exposure as well. But that's the makeup of what the fund is. And so just moving ahead to just a lay of the land of what you see here, what we've mentioned. The personnel that when we talk about 170 North Rock personnel, that's not including the 55 different portfolio manager teams that we have. So in addition to those individuals, we're well north of 300 total professionals that are part of the team. But of the 170, that includes a very significant number of technology and development teams, as we have our own internal investment and order management and risk trading systems that our PM teams all leverage from. You could see from an investor type and geographic diversity of our investors. We are well diversified. We don't have any significant concentration by investor type. North Rock was and is owned by Lighthouse Partners, which is a larger organization that has different investments that it manages. North Rock is run completely autonomous from that function, with the one function on the investor relations and marketing side being where we share that resource. And so Dan Ledbetter on the investor side is technically sits under the Lighthouse umbrella, whereas I am directly employed by North Rock itself, as are all of the other 170 personnel that we are referencing here, as well as the portfolio managers, which would be on the portfolio manager side, a mix of internal employee teams, which represent about 60 or 70% of our PM teams are direct employees of the fund. And then the remaining investments that North Rock has are managers that are could be exclusive to us, but yet running an SMA with the flexibility that would come with running an SMA and having their own management company would be to run external capital at some point down the road. And then we have a few select investments, less than 10% of the total, that are managers that have external capital in addition to North Rock's capital today, And the reason that they're in the portfolio would have been a specific sector or regional fit that made sense for us at the time that we made that investment. So we're flexible. Really, with what we are focused on is bringing in the best talent that we can, whether that's as an employee or in this other sort of more arm's length type structure with a management company. In either way, we have full transparency into real-time positions, real-time risk management, and we control all of the cash and treasury related to any of the teams, because each of the teams that are not employees are set up in a separately managed account that North Rock controls all the risk to. From what are the objectives of North Rock? We really build up our return from return perspective based on these metrics that you see here. So we're really targeting a volatility in the range of 5 to 7%. As you can see, historically, it's been at the lower end of that range. And I'll talk a little bit about what we're doing to bring that higher. That has translated to an 8% annualized return based on a 1.5 times return or sharp on that vol has gotten us to about an 8% annualized return. 95% of those returns are driven purely by alpha. So we are a low net, very high idiosyncratic exposure fund. We have de minimis amounts of risk to non-alpha related risks. So momentum, growth, value, all of those things, while not perfectly factor neutral, are very de minimis in nature. And that's how you get to 95% of our returns driven purely by alpha. What we're looking to do on a go-forward basis is move the vol higher, more towards at a minimum, the midpoint of that 5 to 7% range. That'll be accomplished by a bit higher gross exposure than we've had historically. So historically, we're pretty conservatively levered, I think, relative to the peer group, and yet still have produced comparable returns. But we've been on a gross exposure basis historically just under 300%, the high 200% range. We expect that on a go-forward basis to be closer to 400%. So 200% long, 200% short. That will get us that volatility higher into that midpoint of the range. And with a similar 1.5 to 2 times sharp return on that will get us, we believe, into a double digit, more consistent return profile on a go forward basis. This chart here is just a summary of the team. And I'll just stick to right now to highlight the investment team. We're really focused on three different areas. My colleague, Adeen Khan, who's been with North Rock since 2014, he had spent 8 prior years at Millennium in a similar role. He's in charge with sourcing all in his team with all of the managers that we have in the program. So they're out and their job and the responsibility is really understanding the successful managers that might be sitting inside other platforms and other types of hedge funds and always working to recruit individuals to the fund. That's the lifeblood of any multi-manager organization, including ours. And we you know, invest in that and take that quite seriously. My team is really, if you think of us as the fundamental monitoring team that's overseeing the PMs on a daily basis. So looking at the PMs from a fundamental lens, what is working in their stock idea generation, what is not, trying to help them understand where they may have some small factor tilts that are impacting their performance, even though, again, we limit that from a risk perspective. And then the third pillar of our investment team is our risk team. That team is really focused on at the portfolio level, as well as the individual manager level, both policing all of the many risk limits that we have to our managers, as well as making sure the portfolio is tightly constructed from a factor perspective. And then you could see the diversity of sectors that our PM teams all are predominantly trading with, and then the large number of operating team members that we have as well. When we think about sourcing talent, and I'll go quickly here just to make sure I'm adhering to the time frame here. We are a firm that is focused on experienced portfolio managers. So again, to differentiate ourselves a little bit from the competition, we are not the firm that is taking a senior analyst from another firm and trying to teach them or coach them or train them how to be a portfolio manager on our investors' dollar. We instead are going after very experienced PMs. You could see the average PM has been a PM for over 12 years before they've joined NorthRock when we look at bringing them in. The average PM has been with us for about 3.5 to 4 years. So in total, you're talking about 15 plus years of PM experience from our current roster. And that's again, something that we believe that the PM's role is not solely in stock selection, but it's also in risk management. And that risk management comes from experience. And that's something that we really value very significantly. So as I said, we are in total a low net and high idiosyncratic fund. Also, so too are each of the individual PMs. We don't have some PMs that are long only and others that are short only and put that together to come to a relatively neutral portfolio. Each of the teams are running with the same risk criteria that we have for the overall fund. And you could see some of those characteristics here in terms of the number of teams. This is a typical team would have 40 to 80 active positions, an analyst team with them working exclusively with them between 1 and 4 analysts and targeting 80 plus percent idiosyncratic risk, as I mentioned. From a portfolio construction standpoint, we have Kelly, you know, leading the way as the CIO. We have a top-down view as it relates to certain sectors that we believe are more alpha-rich over time. Those sectors include healthcare, technology, consumer. When you're running a long-short strategy, you need a proper amount of intra-sector dispersion to be successful. And those sectors, whether it's market share gainers, winners and losers, you have, you know, in the case of healthcare, new drugs emerging and others becoming obsolete. There's lots of movement there. And then on the bottoms up side, we're going to have a view though that what is the talent of managers that are out there that we could bring into the program. And so today you can see our largest allocation is to industrials, and industrials do share a lot of the characteristics that we find, you know, attractive for alpha, but maybe not the most, but yet it's today the bottoms up driver is going to be, what's the talent we can add to the portfolio? So you could see we're running a very diversified book. Energy is the one area, as you could see, is a very de minimis level of exposure. And that's intentional because it doesn't have the top-down view that we're looking for, meaning in energy, so much of the sector is dependent upon the price of oil or natural gas. And if you're running a low net long-short book, you need that dispersion. And there's less dispersion in that sector, meaning there's a lot of volatility in the sector, but often you have to pick the timing of when or have a view on the other underlying price of oil. And that's a function of why we're going to have less exposure to a sector like that. But I want to be cognizant of time. So I'll just leave you with just quick topic on risk management. So as I said earlier, there is risk limits that we have across all the different portfolio manager teams that we're enforcing on a daily basis. On average, it's about 25 different risk limits that each of the teams must adhere to. So that's everything from maximum position sizes on longs and shorts to avoid, you know, any concentration in the book, to geographical limits, a net exposure by subsector. So even a consumer-focused manager, we don't want them to be all long retail and short gaming and leisure. We want the net exposures to each of those subsectors to be somewhat tight as well. So those types of risk factors risk limits, including market caps, to make sure that we're not long large caps and short small caps or vice versa. We're trying to really harvest just pure alpha and not take those kinds of risks in the book. On the other side of this chart, you could see that we have drawdown triggers for each of the teams. This is very representative of most all of the teams of how it looks. Some teams we might have a little bit wider first trigger, but we have a 3-trigger system. These triggers are there not only for us to have the impact of limiting the loss that any one manager could have on the overall portfolio, but also to give the manager not only transparency, but a comfort level to know the right amount of risk they should be running in their portfolio to avoid hitting these triggers, to take the decision away from themselves and put it on us to enforce these triggers. You know, most teams are creating a book that has the right amount of risk to maximize profit, but also limit the downside to hitting these triggers. To be clear, we can adjust an allocation to a manager at any time for any reason, that we don't have to wait for these triggers to be hit. And in fact, the turnover that we have over a long period of time, about a third of the managers will move on from because they've hit one or all of these triggers. But the other two thirds of the managers that we will end up terminating really are a function of just underperformance, not necessarily large losses, but not living up to the alpha that we would have expected them to generate. And that equates to the terminations that we see, which for us averages about 15%, 15% manager turnover per year. So on a baseline of, you know, 50 plus, you're looking at high single digits is what we would expect to turn over in any given year. And that's why the sourcing side is so essential, because that's going to be the refreshing of managers and upgrading of managers that we've had. So I will leave it off here. This slide deck didn't include the December performance, which I'll note was up about 1.3%. So a better end to what was a more challenging year for alpha generation. We could discuss that or any other questions that you have now, but I will turn it back over to you guys.
Thank you, Craig. Any questions from the trustees? So I have a few questions.
Go ahead, Susan. I had just a couple of questions. On your 2% fee, you mentioned, or there was a note about the pass-through of certain expenses. And I wondered if you could explain what that is and what maybe the average pass-through cost, what we could expect as a pass-through expense.
Understood. Yeah. So there's really, I would say, we break out the pass-through expenses into two components. One of them, which is a little bit higher to quantify, depending on the year, it would be very variable, is the incentive fee that we're paying to our portfolio manager teams. So that ranges, that incentive fee that a manager will get is typically in the high double digit percentage. So call it 15 to 20%. Incentive fee that would go to a manager. So in certain years, that could translate into a couple of percent of pass-through expense. In other years, it could be closer to zero, or even in a very good year, it could be even larger. That's certainly completely dependent on the manager's performance. In terms of the kind of more, let's call it consistent pass-through expenses, or those include, many of the different operational groups and other salaries and data teams and others to run to run the business are pass-through expenses. That in total, in addition to that, the analysts that supporting the portfolio manager teams and the sell side costs, and not only via commissions but also other data costs or other sell side expenses that would flow in total, the sum of those expenses historically for us, which would include other expenses, related to admin and audit fees and things like this, has been around 2%. This year it is slightly higher. It's going to come in probably around, as we finalize our year end here, maybe around 2.2 to 2.3%. But historically, that level is about what we are targeting in that 2% range. Relative to other multi-strategy funds, we believe that compares quite favorably. While not an inexpensive model, but to generate the alpha and the consistency of it, we acknowledge is expensive. But because we're solely focused on equities and not spending money investing in other asset classes, we believe we're able to keep that level less than the industry as a whole.
And thank you. May I ask one other question? And that is, in your current fund, what is the makeup of your client base? Do you have other public pension funds?
We do. So this chart here that I've just, if, I don't know if you're able to view it, but pension funds equate to about 30% of the investor base, okay, with the next closest high net worth individuals, 26%. And then what we define as other financial institutions, which would include certain channels like that might come through the banking channel, like a Raymond James, would be nearly 20%. So that's the makeup of the investor base. So it's pretty diversified, and there are other, we do include, I would say just for transparency, there are certain, you know, state and even out of the US, you know, state run function, organizations that are investing, you know, through that, some of that coming through sovereign wealth funds, which is listed here as around 11%.
So on your pension fund here, are you able to say what percentage would be municipal pension funds?
I don't have that right here in front of me. You know, Dan, I don't know if there's
off the top.
I'd rather not estimate, you know, on a public call like this, but we could certainly follow up and get you guys the answer to that question. I just don't have it solid, so okay. I'd rather
not. No, that's fine. Thank you.
It's pretty good portion, but yeah, I don't know off the top of my head either.
So I have a few questions. One, can you just go to the slide that shows the performance, annualized performance? I don't know who's driving.
Yep.
Yeah. So of these year-to-date returns, you know, that's since 2013, these are all net of fees, I'm assuming?
Correct.
Okay, so net of fees. And the high watermark, is it an individualized investor high watermark, or is it at the fund level?
It would be at an individual investor base, you know, so where when you come in, it would be,
right,
you know, your high watermark. So, you know, as I said earlier, I note the you know, bit more challenging year. Again, it got a little bit better in December, so a closer to, you know, 3% number. The only down year being 2016. Otherwise, you know, a very consistent, you know, performance with some better years. Certainly 2020 was one of them.
I see that. So you only had one down year. And the max drawdown, is that that 669, is that a intra-month drawdown? Or is that, that's obviously not an annual drawdown. So what is that reference?
Yeah, that's representing a monthly or a peak to trough. Yeah.
Gotcha. And excuse me if you've said it already, but your long short book. So is it, you know, what's the net exposure?
Yeah, so where we sit, I mean, as we speak in this very minute, we're at about 7%, 7% net exposure. Typically the range, and I have actually a chart here that I could show you. So this is the historical net exposure and gross exposure of the fund. So you could see historically we've averaged 5%. What you'll notice is the more recent time frame that net exposure has been even less than 5%. And the gross exposure, as I said, referenced to you know, high 200s. Today it's about, this chart starts to show the upward trend in that, you know, we've been moving the gross exposure higher. Part of it is now that we have the diversity of 55 different manager teams. In the earlier years of North Rock, fewer teams, it made sense to run with a little bit less gross exposure, but do expect it to be in the higher 300s range, closer to 400 on a go-forward basis.
Okay.
And but we don't expect the net exposure to be much different than, you know, less than 10. That is, you know, not that it couldn't at times, and it has, as you see historically, gotten a bit higher, but you know, for very short periods of time. And we would, if in fact it was more sustainably at a higher level because each of the managers were within their own risk limits, but all kind of having a higher net exposure, we could hedge that exposure back down to bring it to levels. Historically, not something that we've needed to do very frequently, but we would do so, you know, to bring the net exposure down if we felt it was, you know, unnecessarily high for an extended period of time.
Okay. And your management fee was 2%?
Right.
2 and 20.
So the two is all of the expense that isn't otherwise included in a pass through way. So there isn't the second 20, Instead, it's just the 2%. But what is passed through to the fund is the incentive fees that we're paying the managers, which on average would be, from their perspective, 20%. But even then, I would note that each of the managers themselves are trading on effectively an unfunded account. So they're burdening with the full financing rate of deploying the capital in their portfolio. So when they have a trading P&L that let's just say is $11 million, if their financing costs are $1 million, their payout is only based on $10 million, the $11 million less the one. So they have a hurdle rate of cost of capital effectively. And so we, you know, we hold them accountable to that and don't pay them out unless they're, you know, exceeding that cost of capital.
So the incentive fee is at a manager level? Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And that's part of the pass-through expense. So of that would be, again, in additional to the baseline pass-through that I mentioned, which was in the ballpark of 2%, that variable pass-through is going to be the incentive fee that we pay to the managers. So just for, you know, for clarity's sake, if in a given year the fund was completely flat, zero trading, you know, zero P&L of any kind, there would be the 2% fee as well as the pass-through expenses that would be a 2%, but there would be no, you know, no incentive fees because we were flat. Even in a year that we're up money, the incentive fee again is there is no additional incentive fee. So to North Rock is only getting the management company of North Rock, let's say it that way, is only getting the 2%. We're not taking anything else.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you.
And again, this is where I would say relative to the peer group, I don't want to sit here and sell you that this is the least expensive model, but I think proportionally to the alpha generated, this model, we are at the low end of the spectrum as it relates to pass-through expenses and other fee structures associated with this type of model, because it is expensive to employ 55 different teams and the analysts, et cetera. But we are, you know, very confident in saying that we are very fair to investors and that we have the right proportion of investor profit versus, you know, our profit as well as that of the portfolio managers themselves.
Makes sense. Thanks, guys. Any other questions from trustees? Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sorry, I'm looking at exit here, just having a bit second.
Okay, I think everybody is gone there. So kind of a dynamic and interesting space. You know, we've employed hedge funds in the past. And it is a rather complex and you know, interesting component of the portfolio. But the reason why we employ hedge funds is for when times are uncertain. They give you a certain level of exposure with some acts more of a ballast in rough markets, turbulent markets. When things get a little dicey, they tend to outperform. And you can see that clearly from the last manager over the last 10 or 15 years, they only had one negative year. So, I mean, that's pretty compelling. I believe the first manager as well. So I don't know if you have any questions or comments or if anybody has any feedback. You know, not the most interesting presentations in the world, but certainly a good space. And by policy, we need to, you know, have that. Taylor, I don't know if you can pull up the report that I sent. If not, I can share it. It was called the proposal, New Haven Surf proposed. Yeah, that's it. So this just shows you our current investment policy statement and, you know, where our exposure is, our current allocation in dollars and our target ranges. And, you know, we're looking at approximately a $10 million mandate here from the cash that was from the ADEC. You can see we have about $25 million in cash that needs to be deployed. And currently we have zero exposure to hedge funds. At times, there are certain instances, like, for example, private equity and real estate, we had zero exposure at one point. But by policy, the hedge fund, we need to have at least a 5% with a 6% target. So, you know, we're looking at about a 5% weighting of the portfolio. You know, and you know, again, it doesn't have to be one of these three. These are three that have been vetted, have done a good job. The reason why they were brought to the table is their performance is over time above our assumed rate of return of the pension fund. Most of them have very low volatility, which is why you would hire a hedge fund. Certainly the first and the third had the lower volatility numbers. The second manager takes a little bit more risk, but has a little bit more reward over time. So it's just a matter of, you know, what we're looking at. And, let me just take a pause there and just get some feedback from you folks on what you thought and if you had any questions or comments.
A quick question. North Rock, mm-hmm. they had the multiple layers of fees.
Yes.
The other two did not discuss that. Do you think they have those multiple layers and just didn't discuss that structure with us?
So the first one mentioned it. They mentioned the 40 basis points of, you know, internal expenses. So they did disclose it, and it is in their you know, subcategories. So they were, I think, two and I don't recall their, they were 2 and 20, I believe.
2 and 20, yeah.
2 and 20 plus, they called it management fees. I think they said around 45 basis points.
Right.
So that was disclosed. The second manager does not have any implicit costs. It was just the 2 and 15, I believe. Or was it 1.5 and 20?
It was 1.5 and 20.
Correct. Mm-hmm. With no additional fees. And then there was this last one. And that second manager, mind you, is a very small, emerging manager. One of the reasons we added them to the foray was because of our emerging manager policy or guidelines, if you will. They only had $70 million under management. I know they are in line to pick up another $20 million fund of funds to invest in them. So ultimately they're anywhere between 70 and 90 million. That has not closed yet. So that obviously isn't they're not able to report on that. But so that being said, our emerging manager policy said any manager under, you know, 100 million under management, and we can't represent more than 20% of the fund's allocation. So clearly we would be all within the range. Should we choose to invest in them as well? A couple of the things that are also one of the reasons that the emerging manager is an important part of this process is, you know, the ability to be at an entry level with a fund that's nimble and small and equity owned. I don't know if you picked up on that, but they said the vast majority of both the partners' wealth was invested side by side. So to me, that keeps, you know, they eat their own cooking, if you will. So, you know, I think people make more prudent decisions when their own equity is invested alongside of their investors. So, you know, I think for all of those reasons, we've adopted an emerging manager policy. I think there are a lot of, you know, benefits to that. North Rock is a subsidiary of Lighthouse. And the first manager's is a subsidiary of JP Morgan. Again, there are benefits to that as well. Obviously, don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting that, bigger isn't better. But from a performance standpoint, all three managers are superior. The volatility numbers are what we really, really are targeting here with this space. It's not so much, okay, who had the highest return? It's who had the best return with the lowest volatility numbers. And if you look at it from that standpoint, the first and the third manager have the best returns with the lowest volatility. And that's what we kind of want out of this space. I'm open to discussion on any of the three. Any thoughts or feedback?
I actually liked Crescent Rock, but for the point that you met, except for two things. The volatility, and the other thing was they don't seem to have any public pension exposure.
Correct.
That made me a little bit nervous to be like the one public pension client that they have. I don't know that how well they would understand what risk for us means versus wealthy individuals or other hedge fund investors. So I did like them. And it raised the question for me, Derek, although I don't think it probably makes sense. Would you ever want to put, if it's $10 million, would you want to do some amount in emerging and some amount in a more traditional, one of the other two?
I think that's a great point. So I could go ahead. I'm sorry.
I also, between North Rock and is it Highbridge?
Highbridge, correct.
Yep. Yeah, between the two of them, it's really weird to have someone confess that their fees are very expensive. And that's what North Rock said. We know we're expensive. We know we're very expensive. That part really troubled me a lot because I'm not sure you're getting a whole lot more for that additional expense. So my preference in that regard was Highbridge.
Okay, so I'm actually going to chime in. I'm going to handle these questions or statements in a few different ways. So yes, I agree. I think when you're dealing with an emerging manager, if we wanted to, give them a benefit and say, hey, you know, we'd like to partner, certainly we could split the dollar amount. We do have a little bit of leeway on that. I mean, even if we wanted to add a little bit more money to the space per the investment guidelines, we do have the upward range of that. So that's issue number one. Issue number two, what North Rock was saying, I think, I don't think they were saying they were expensive. They're actually least expensive of the group. I don't want to say that. They're the second least expensive. Crescent Rock had the lower management fee, that annual management fee. So I think Crescent Rock is the least expensive. Of North Rock and Highbridge, North Rock is actually less expensive.
Yes.
Yeah, because that what they were saying, they don't have that high watermark fee. So that was what they were saying. So what they're saying is it's expensive to employ all these people. So they were saying where those variable costs come in. So they were actually on the lower end of the range on this type of investment vehicle. So I think North Rock didn't do a great job of explaining that very well, which is why I followed up with that question myself. What was impressive to me was with North Rock, they were only down 1 year in the past, 11 or about 11 years of investment performance. They're down 1 year and it was only a 4% loss. Whereas, obviously Crescent Rock has a much smaller time frame, but they were down in 2022, 8.3%. Crescent Rock was. North Rock was up a little under 5.4, and Highbridge was down 3.8. Highbridge was down two of the past 15, or I'm sorry, what year is that? 12 years. So two of the last 12 years, Highbridge had negative performance, both small losses, 3.82 in 21 and 4.59 in 2019. North Rock was only down, like I said, that 1 year back in 2016, they were down 4%. So from the goal of what we're trying to accomplish is steady returns over time. And I think North Rock did a great job of saying that. The other question you mentioned about Crescent Rock, about not understanding public pension funds, the team worked together. If you remember their chart of their organizational chart, Susan, that showed that they were all worked together on multi-billion dollar hedge funds in the past, of which all have very much worked with public pension funds. And they do definitely, I've had lengthy discussions with them. They do definitely understand the target and the goal of what we're trying to accomplish here.
Okay. Thank you, Derek.
You're welcome. Any other comments or questions? Okay. So pulling that chart back up of...
Sorry, I have a question.
Yes.
This is Christy Samperi. Going the chart that you were showing where the cash was all invested in on your end?
Yes.
$25 million, that says cash RJ. I'm assuming that's a money market position, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it's actually in a high yield money market, earning right. just under 5.5%.
Okay.
Any other questions, comments? Taylor, can you pull that slide back up, the allocation slide? Okay, thank you. Yeah, so this just shows, you know, some of the opportunities and you know, we could talk about, you know, I'm gonna talk about the markets and the performance report. I know it's been a long meeting, so I want to be respectful of your time. But just to kind of show you, you know, where we are with the hedge fund space, that we do not have an allocation there. We did, but that fund has been redeemed. So just wanted to touch base and say, okay, we're looking at, you know, 10-ish million. Again, to your point, Susan, if we wanted to carve off a smaller piece for an emerging manager, you know, we could certainly do that, either play with the dollar amounts, increase it from 10 to maybe 13 million or what have you, and or just split the 10 million up however you see fit. So that's, you know, we're amicable to either side of that. So Susan, I guess you mentioned you liked Crescent Rock and I'm sorry, you're on mute. You liked Crescent Rock and North Rock?
Susan, you're on mute.
You're on mute, Susan.
Yeah, I like the two rocks.
I think there's some psychology behind the naming of the funds, but yes. Yeah, okay. So I personally agree with you on those. I think Crescent Rock and North Rock are both, good funds, and I think they'd be a good addition. Is there any sort of discussion about, you know, what you feel comfortable with as far as sizing?
Well, I'm wondering what the other trustees think. They may not want to do too.
Well, Susan, I think it makes sense to do the two. I really like Crescent. I like the fact that it's an emerging manager, and I like supporting emerging managers, and the North Rock with their consistent returns. I'm okay with splitting it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And we do that often, as you all know. I mean, we'll take like maybe the lion's share of the money and give it to the more, you know, tenured manager. And then, you know, again, this is a type of investment. It's not like a private equity or a private real estate where you can't add to it. These are liquid investments. They're all quarterly liquidity. So you could add or, detract money. So you can reward those managers that are doing well, managers that aren't living up to our expectations. Obviously, we can take money out. So it is definitely a more liquid vehicle. So it's not like one of those other types of alternative investments where these monies are locked up for, you know, 8 to 10 years with, you know, very low liquidity and so on and so forth. So this vehicle is more like just a conventional equity investment. So I think it makes sense to certainly start smaller with the emerging manager. I don't know if you have any idea of, or, you know, maybe we should we do like a 7 and 3? Should we go to like 12, you know, even a $12 million mandate, we could do an 8 and 4 or 10 and two, whatever you folks feel. I think it would be meaningful to both firms to get that sizable.
I like the 7 and 3 split.
7 and 3. Okay.
Yeah. I agree, Kathy. I like that.
So 7 million to North Rock and 3 million to Crescent Rock. And again, that's something that we can always size up or size down over time. So I'm not opposed to your recommendation at all. So should someone make a motion of that, or?
Is Jerry still on the phone?
I know, we're not hearing from the other trustees.
Jerry is on the phone. I just don't know. Okay. Jerry, I don't know if you can hear us, but you're on.
Make sure we have a quorum.
Is Jerry muted again? Yeah, Jerry's muted again. Taylor, how did you unmute Jerry that time?
I didn't unmute him. I think he found a way to unmute himself. I've been asking him to unmute, so I'm not sure if...
That's interesting. So Jerry's there, but he's muted. Let me call his cell phone.
Can you hear me?
There he goes. Yep, there he goes.
Hear you now, Jer.
You hear me?
We hear you.
All right, so is there a motion to split this money up 7 and 3 with Crescent and with what's a Highbridge?
North Rock. North Rock and Crescent.
North Rock, I'm sorry. Was that Kathy's motion? Who gets the 7? Who gets the 3, Derek?
It can be my motion. I move that we allocate $3 million to Crescent Rock and 7 to North Rock to help satisfy our hedge exposure.
That's a motion. Is there a second to Kathy's motion?
Susan Whetstone, second.
Is there discussion on the motion? In the absence of, I'd like to take a voice vote from the trustees. Trustee Graves?
Yes.
Trustee Whetstone?
Aye.
Trustee Stampieri?
Yes.
And Trustee Sagnello is also a yes. Motion carries.
Okay. I will get that process started.
All right, so I think the next motion to entertain would be a motion to adjourn. Can I hear a motion?
Jerry, we have a few more things, if you don't mind. I'm sorry.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, just wanted to go over the performance report and then touch back on the rebalance of the fund, because with the ADAC, we wanted to get some of these funds to work for the
pension. All right, I see. Yeah, I see where you are. Okay. Taylor, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Okay, perfect. The next page, please. Keep going down. Okay, perfect. So this is the total fund as of December 31st. Total fund is $228 million. You can see for the month, the fund was up 4% for the month. The quarter was up 7.58. So the last quarter of the year was up just under 8%. That's very sound return for the quarter. 6 months, 445, which obviously would be represent the fiscal year. The 1 year, the fund was up 11.67. So good rolling 1 year return. Since inception, going back to 08, it's 6.01. So heading back into the positive territory, close to our assumed rate. Moving on, you can see the equity portfolio represents about 41% is U.S. equity. Large cap value is the overweight bias right now, and we can talk about that momentarily. But we still like the large cap value bias going into this year. We think that's the better place to be in the equity, large cap equity space. You can see it's over a 2-to-1 ratio. Mid cap equity is about 6.8% of the portfolio, so 7% of the portfolio, or $15 million in our passive Vanguard index. Next page, please. Small cap equity has done very well. We have our active manager, Fuller and Thaler, the small cap core, represents about 8.25% of the portfolio. Non-US equity is about 17%. You can see that's been a pretty good place to be. We also think that moving into this year, that's going to be a good equity exposure in the non-US equity markets. Fixed income, domestic fixed income, you can see total fixed income 14.5%, which is still historically on the light side of the allocation. We'll talk about that momentarily, but of that split, about 10% of it is domestic and 5% international fixed income. And then the cash is, you know, in part due to that ADEC. Next page, please. Thank you. This just shows some of the private investments. Next page, we have a nice graph now that we are invested. Keep going. So right here, go back. I'm sorry. Was it one back, I believe? There you go. So now that we've been invested in, you know, some of these private investments for a period of time, this chart actually is a good chart. It goes to show you over time, you know, because a lot of these funds work, as you all know, you have the committed capital, the called capital, and total contribution. And with most of these managers, they distribute return to the investments via, you know, cash flow. So this chart does a good job of showing, you know, market values. Historically, we just show the market value of the fund. This chart actually shows you some more complex equations, which show you actually the multiple of, you know, the total value to paid interest. And these numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 columns from the right, that TVPI and DPI and RVPI. This is a way to look at total return to investor, you know, on called capital and return capital. So this kind of shows you what managers are doing a good job. You want to see that number over 1%. You know, basically 1% is you know, flat. Your dollars are flat. Anything over 1% is, you know, a positive return over time, because we're early in a lot of these vintages. You have to remember, if we take a step back, the J curve on these, a lot of these private investments, it takes time for these managers to become fully invested. So there is a drag on returns. So some of these earlier vintages, you're starting to see that, you know, 2017s and 18s, you're starting to see positive returns on these investments. Some of the newer investments, we don't see, you know, as high of a TVPI, which is a total value on your investment. But you can start to see these things start to materialize. And then that inception IRR, so that's internal rate of return. That's just a calculation of the total investment internally, what their valuations with, you know, with audited financials and things of that nature. So this is a nice chart. You're going to be seeing this now, you know, obviously from here on out, because a lot of these private investments are starting to materialize returns, and you can see that here. So anything over one is a good return. And as a, you know, what you'd like to see them as close to two as possible. Obviously, that would be, you know, 100% return on investment. So just you're starting to see that. I think that's a good chart for our private investments. That said, go down one more page, please. One more. Okay, so this just visually shows that chart that I presented earlier. And if you could toggle back and forth momentarily, but you could see graphically in color, you know, we have to manage to the investment policy statement and the guidelines. And, you know, we have our target allocation, and then we can have deviation from our target, but as long as we're in the ranges, that's fine. And this just depicts how off we are from our target. And you can see we're slightly underweight large cap equity, slightly underweight mid cap equity, and slightly overweight smaller and non-US equity. But in the green, you can see within the range, you know, we are within the range with everything except, you know, international fixed income, you know, cash and hedge fund. But with this rebalance, Taylor, if you could go back to that chart that I showed you with the recommendations, the Word document that showed, yes, this. So of the $25 million in cash, the ADEC, you know, we just allocated $10 million to the hedge fund, which is getting us right around that 5% range. So we'll be fine there. Some of the places we see opportunity is, you know, mid-cap equity is a good place to be. You can see we are a little light of our target. We're at about 6.8% of our target. The range is 5 to 10. So we'd like to increase that by 2%, which is about $5 million. We'd like to add $5 million to mid-cap equity, our passive index, and then $5 million or 2% in domestic fixed income. We'd like to bring that up a little bit. Just we're historically light on fixed income. We like what's going on with the Fed action. We think, you know, as you all know, when the Fed is raising rates, that put a lot of pressure on the value of the bonds in the portfolio. Now that it looks like the Fed is going to be a little bit more accommodative, potentially easing in 2024 or cutting rates, that will be a tailwind for fixed income. So we like that opportunity set. So we'd like to add a little money there to take advantage of that. So we'd like to overall, the $10 million to the hedge fund, which you've already made that motion. We'd like to increase the $5 million to mid-cap, $5 million to domestic fixed income. And then we have to pay benefit payments. So $5 million would go towards Northern Trust benefit payments as well. So those are proposed changes to the cash allocation, which would represent that $25 million that's sitting in cash.
Derek, I have a question on the slide before that showed the funds and what would you call it, the DPI?
Yes.
My question isn't related to that. It's that in the first couple of columns, it says remaining commitment and then yes, total contribution. How does it get decided? I mean, I kind of thought we just, if we said $5 million for somebody, they just got the $5 million.
That's a good question. That's a good question. So typically with like liquid investments, like this hedge fund that we're talking about and or a stock or bond manager, that is the way it works. It's okay, we allocate $10 million to the manager, they get to $10 million and invest it. With private investments, private real estate and private equity, namely, it goes on a call schedule. So they know that they have the City of New Haven Employees Retirement Fund committed to $5 million or $7.5 million. But as they do not just have the opportunity to just go in and invest that money, it's actually accretive to the process of private investments where it's more judiciously invested. So what will happen is, let's say a private real estate fund, for example, Susan, let's say they want to go buy a building. Well, it's not like there's an unlimited amount of buildings for sale. So as an opportunity presents itself, they will go to their investor class and say, hey, this building's going to cost $50 million and your percentage capital of that, percentage ownership of the fund, and they'll put a capital call in there. So that takes time. And that is what I was mentioning earlier, the J curve on these things. The time in which it takes to get these funds fully invested is a little bit of a lag on performance, but over time is accretive to a solid long-term return. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome. You can see from some of our earlier investments, we're basically fully invested or the remaining capital is very low, where some of the newer investments that we've just hired fairly recently, you can see the majority of them are still need to call the capital. So that kind of shows you the vintages of the fund. Any other questions I can answer?
All right, so Derek, you're looking for a vote to accept your recommendations on the rebalance?
Yes, please, Jerry. That was back on that other paper, Taylor, if you could pull that up again. Thank you. So we already voted for the $10 million hedge fund split. So now I'm looking to add the $5 million to mid-cap index, $5 million to domestic fixed income, and the last $5 million to Northern Trust.
What's the trustee's pleasure on that?
Just a quick question, and Derek, you may have just answered it. However, I know when one of our managers came for an increase in allocation, we ended up doing a search. We don't have to go through that process to add to these existing managers?
Correct. So that was kind of the discussion we had, a handful of months back, Kathy. The liquid managers, that was kind of the point of the conversation. Liquid managers, we can just add a detract to whenever needed, whether it's to pay benefit payments, to rebalance. So liquid stock and bond managers, whereas the private managers that we hire, some of the funds that have come out that have had, successor vintages. So Fairview 5, Fairview 6, Bridge 2, Bridge 3, that was our, what we looked at as the ability to add to those managers or reward managers who've done a good job is we had to wait for them to open up another vintage of their fund. And that was how we added to those funds. So that was the difference between the liquid and illiquid managers.
The limited access. Okay, just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
I'm
I actually have a question. On some on the performance on some of the funds that are held in some of those different sectors, like mid cap. And there was another, there were a few others that I was looking at. They actually underperformed the indices. So is there a way that you can actually take, if we grant you the new money, put it into a different fund that actually is outperforming the index?
So do you, can we pull the investment performance back up, please, Taylor, and go back up a few pages here? So which manager are you speaking of specifically, or do you have specifics? Or
yeah, I had a few of them that I was actually looking at last night.
Okay, so you know, we're open-minded. So typically, the way these funds work, Dr. Stampieri, is the, you know, we look at the full business cycle, which is 3 to 5 years. So we keep, we do a, you know, annual accounting of managers that underperform or outperform. We have a watch process. Certainly, if managers that consistently underperform active managers, we'll put them on watch. We'll watch them for three consecutive quarters. If they don't, and we might call them to the table to talk about their underperformance. So there are some managers that are active that have underperformed. Some outperform over time. But we tend to favor passive management in highly efficient indices, like, you know, large cap, for example. Passive investing is very good. Mid cap, we have a passive index. Sometimes we couple different sectors. Sometimes we have an active and a passive manager. But where we typically have found good active management is in international equity. Small cap is an international is a domestic manager that has outperformed consistently over time. Our U.S. bond manager has outperformed consecutively over time. Some of these managers are hired, you know, fairly recently. So we do give them typically a full business cycle. But, you know, certainly, I don't know if you want to discuss that now. We can certainly talk offline, whatever your preference. But as far as you know, the recommendation for today was mid-cap. So that's a passive Vanguard index for our mid-cap exposure. Right. So that obviously you'd get market performance in that index. And then the domestic fixed income was Dolan McNary has consistently outperformed over all of the timeframes. So we are looking to add to an outperforming active manager, the domestic fixed income, Dolan McNary, and passive mid-cap equity. So certainly I'm happy to discuss with you any of our active managers underperformance. And if you have questions about any of them, we can certainly talk about that. But the two recommendations that we made today are for one passive mid-cap manager, which is in line, obviously, because it's a passive index. And then the other is the active U.S. bond manager that has done a good job of outperformance over time. Does that make sense? Or do you have
further? It makes complete sense. I was just, can you go up on the slide, on the, like, just go to the other slide that shows these then, please.
So one page up, Taylor, please. Is this page?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have a question here, Doctor?
I mean, if you look at like the Vanguard fund, the Vanguard funds are usually really good. This Vanguard fund that's under the large cap value has underperformed the index.
There's an expense ratio in the Vanguard fund. And it also has to do with the flow of in and out. So obviously, it has not been owned the whole time. So when we redeem or add to different sectors, you'll have some divergence from the actual index return. So it's money value versus time value, or dollar weighted, if you will.
No, I get that, but it also says the inception date was January 19th. So I'm assuming that's when the money was invested.
Yes, in this particular sector, yes. But there was actually that's somewhat erroneous. That actually replaced a large cap value equity manager that was an active manager, which we terminated and added the passive Vanguard fund in. So there is some disparity there.
Okay. And then as well as if you look up at the large cap growth, the American Century has also underperformed the index as well.
Yeah. And they're a fairly new manager. They were hired in August of 22. So as I mentioned earlier, a full business cycle is 3 to 5 years. Obviously gross, you know, anything changes. If there was a manager that, if there's anything substantial change to the manager, we would obviously, you know, take note of that and put them on watch. But we, you know, they're a fairly new manager in addition to the portfolio.
I just was looking at this last night and saw that there were a couple of funds in here that actually underperformed the index.
And you're going to see that from time to time, depending on market cycles, how volatile the markets are. You know, when there's extreme volatility in markets, some active managers tend to outperform. That's where we'd look for an active manager. When things are all, you know, rising tide lifts all boats, you know, sometimes passive does better in those scenarios. So that's why we tend to give them a full market cycle of 3 to 5 years, because, you know, the different equity markets and our fixed income markets, you know, does not always, it's not indicative of, you know, if it was very simple, which is like, hey, passive index performs all the time, we would just index the whole fund. But, you know, there are different market cycles, and all of these managers have been interviewed, vetted. They are top decile managers when they're brought in from a risk reward standpoint. So all of these managers that are here that are active have gone through a very stringent process over time. And of course, you know, active managers, as you know, will underperform in certain market cycles. So, you know, if American Century is more of a defensive, and quite honestly, if you know about the last few years of equity and large cap growth, it was not a good year for a couple of years for growth managers, because if you owned anything other than the seven growth stocks, the FANG stocks or what have you, you know, the biggest growth stocks, if you have any divergence from the large cap growth index, you're going to underperform under those few years. I mean, up until last year, you know, prior to fourth quarter of last year, 100% of the performance came from seven stocks. So if you owned any diversity to those seven stocks, you're going to underperform the benchmark. So because of that unique year last year, most all large cap growth managers active are that have any diversity from the S&P 500 or the Russell 1000 growth are going to underperform. And you could see that just in the S&P 500 equal weight versus the S&P 500, there was huge disparity in returns. So we're not overly concerned as the consultants for this fund for the American Century's underperformance this past year, just because of that. We hire a manager to look different than a benchmark. If we want the benchmark, we'll buy a benchmark, but we actually hire an active manager to look different from the benchmark for those reasons.
I mean, just in my own experience, usually when these indexes, not the indexes, but usually when these, you know, like Vanguard or BlackRock or American Century, when they start to underperform, we just switch them out to a different fund. So my question to you was, is there a different fund that's actually might have performed either at par or above the index? That's all my question was. And I would have, going back to my original question about the money market fund at Raymond James, I would appreciate an exact interest rate number and not just, you know, something below 5.5. What's the actual number that $25 million is invested in?
Well,
and back to me on that, that'd be appreciated.
So it was 5.5% until rates went down. So money markets are variable, as you know. So they float. So it was 5.5 and it went down when the 10-year went down. It went down to, I believe, 5.4, but I can certainly email you an exact rate, mm-hmm. certainly. And getting back to your point about swapping out a manager, with an institutional investor such as City Employees Retirement Fund, you typically hire a manager and you give them the opportunity, because they have gone through a stringent process of vetting their performance over time. And there's been a qualitative and quantitative analysis done. And we believe that smart managers don't get stupid overnight. Their favor of investing or their style of investing might go out of favor for a short period of time, but over a long term, their management process does typically, work itself out over time. So again, I have no affinity towards American Century. If other trustees would like to terminate them, we can certainly terminate them. That's your call. Do any other trustees have any comments on that?
I'm just asking if there's anything, better. And being that this is an institutional fund, it should be, you want to be a little bit more on the conservative side. But so be it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the fund is very conservatively invested. I mean, by the investment policy, the allocation to equities is, very conservative, but we do have, a target rate of return that we need to hit over time. Which is, pretty high rate of return to keep the fund to pay benefits. So, mm-hmm. I'm happy to have further discussions with you, but there is a process that we follow. The fund is very much we do have a watch process. We do monitor these. That's why we have these meetings, right? To look at the different managers, look at their performance, outperformance, underperformance. When we see a manager like American Century that is underperforming, we have dialogues with them. We say, where is the underperformance? They can come back to the board and talk about that. But again, American Century, I'm picking on them just because that was the example you used. If you have anything, as I mentioned, a fund like this, when we pay an active manager, we want them to look different than their passive benchmark. So I would happily do a search for you for a large cap growth manager. But I'd argue if you look at any large cap growth, active large cap growth manager, in the past 2 years or even past 1 year, their performance is going to, if they have diverse, any diversity to their benchmark, they're going to drastically underperform because they own more than just 7 stocks in the portfolio. But again, I'm happy to, I work for you. So if you want me to do a search, I can certainly do that.
I mean, just one other thing, like even on the fixed income, can somebody go to the next slide?
Excuse me, are we going to vote on anything else? I have another meeting I have to go to, and I'd just like to make a suggestion that, Derek, you set up a meeting with Trustee Sampieri and just review the portfolio with her so she has a better understanding of where we are and why we're doing what we're doing.
Happy to do that.
I think that would really help you, Trustee Sampieri.
I'm happy to do that.
Well, there's a motion on the floor.
I think it's very important because I know that's something that we did when I first came on the board.
I think the motion that needs to be made is still regarding the ADEC. Nothing that took place yet.
Taylor, I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me better now?
That's better.
Okay, yeah. So I think the motion that still needs to be made is regarding the ADEC. I think that was the one that further questions was on. So that's the only one I think that still needs to be voted on besides the adjournment.
Was there a second to that motion?
I don't think the motion was made yet.
The motion hasn't been made yet?
No, it has not.
Was the trustee make? I don't think the chair can make a motion. Will the trustee make a motion if that's the? Yeah. May pardon?
The chair can, but
this is Susan Whetstone. I'll make a motion to accept the recommendation for the revisions to the ADAC.
I'm hoping. All right, a motion is made. Is there a second to that motion?
This is Kathy Graves. I second.
Is there discussion on this motion? In the absence of a motion properly made, I'd like to call upon the trustees for a voice vote. Trustee Graves?
Yes.
Trustee Whetstone?
Aye.
Trustee Sampieri?
Aye.
Trustee Sagnello is also an aye. Motion carries. Is there anything else, Derek, for you in part of your financial presentation?
No, thank you, Jerry.
And you will be discussing this further with Controller Sampieri, Derek?
Happy to do so on her availability.
Very good. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second to that motion?
I second it. Susan Whetstone.
Is there a discussion on the motion? There usually isn't. I'd like to call upon the trustee by voice vote. Trustee Graves?
Aye.
Trustee Whetstone?
Aye.
Trustee Sampieri?
Aye.
Trustee Sagnello is also an aye. The meeting is concluded. Thank you very much. I'd like to see you again in another month. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Take care.